Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? Learn more about Wisconsin's cheese-making history at wisconsincheese.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're telling the stories behind iconic dishes. We learn what it will take to save New York's most famous egg cream, discover the importance of the goat neck in the East Village, and take a trip to India for delicious flatbreads.
Our customers who come in to get egg creams and t-shirts, they love to talk about their childhood or their teenage years or their college years.
I was living in Nepal, in northern India, and out there there's a real famous dish, a classic dish, I should say, is called paya.
Parathe Wali Gali, or as it awkwardly translates in English, the lane of the stuffed flatbread makers, is probably one of the most popular food streets in Old Delhi.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween!
I think we have some ghosts in the room today for the main course OG.
It's the Roberta's Orchestra, Solar Myth Orchestra.
Today is Thursday, October 31st. That goes without saying. I am Emily Pearson, and this is the main course OG. I'm here in the studio with my co-host, Patrick Martins.
I'm looking here at our esteemed hosts and guests and can swear to God that I am terrified right now.
What are we hearing? A little bit of, who are we bringing back from the dead today?
Patrick.
Recent happenings of the week.
The Nationals won last night.
What a game.
Wow.
That's Brandon Hoy.
Actually, this is Mike Edison.
There, he's in disguise.
And Brandon Hoy?
Yeah, dude.
Patrick, you're not going to do me?
That's a very good impression right there.
Hey, well, I'm sure all the guests are very happy to be led by me, Emily Pearson, who will be doing a majority, a lion's share of the talking for the rest of the show. Don't interrupt. No one interrupt. I'm Emily Pearson.
I'm Patrick Martins. All right. Good morning, everyone. We're going to jump right in to a game of word association.
I love Halloween. This is the best day
Me
ever.
Too.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
I picked Mike up this morning, and he came with like four bags because he had all of his sound... stuff.
And bro, this is what I'm giving out for Halloween this year. We have chocolate eyeballs and candy cigarettes, which I'm so thrilled that they still make.
Economy candy.
Economy candy rules.
That's going to be one of our questions later in the show. Favorite candy.
Economy candy will have candy cigarettes well past when real cigarettes exist.
Are they eventually like, going to have e-cigarettes?
Vape. Yeah, candy vape.
I think candy vape could be a thing.
That's right. I was running out of time this morning. I didn't have time to put the rat poison on the candy corn. But I did get the razor blades and the apples, though.
Do people still poison candy?
Okay, let me tell you. There has not been one documented case in the history of Halloween of anybody getting a razor blade and an apple.
Okay, well, because they don't give out apples.
Well, it's an urban myth. It doesn't happen. You know, we're giving some kid some LSD. It doesn't happen. Why would an adult give a kid perfectly good LSD and not take it for themselves? It makes no sense.
Noted. Save the drugs for yourself.
Save the
Don't
drugs
give
for
them
yourself.
To the kids. So we're going to jump in with a game of word association. We've selected a word for each person. You have to respond in 10 seconds or less. Fast pace. We'll start with our co-host, Mike Edison. Mike, your words are inebriation and the carnivalesque.
I think we're living it right now. Inebriation and the carnivalesque.
Yeah, actually, that's... the carnivalesque is when things go upside down. The high becomes low, rich becomes poor. So you actually appear talented right now, which makes me think that, yes, we're in a real circus.
Yeah, I'm a real riches to rags story. You guys do Mischief Night? Anybody still do Mischief Night?
What is that?
Because it's right, because you're a prep school Upper East Side boy. You don't know.
Mischief Night? I've learned to fear it, but I don't know
what
it
is.
Are you Mischief Night guy?
Is that when you like put a pumpkin on the top of a building?
No, it's like when you go TP your like English teacher's house, you know, and you soap up some windows.
I think that's what happens in the
suburbs.
You realize
every night is Misfits Night for me.
Misfits Night, yeah.
Oh, Mischief
Night. Yeah.
All right, Brandon, your word is ecstasy.
Who has some? Let's do it. are we allowed to call it Molly at this point, or do we?
That
just...
word was open to interpretation. You could have answered that in any way you
it's
want.
Not I'll tell
you
this. Neutral.
I'll tell you this. Drink your water, because it's going to be a long night. And I'll tell you, I will get up to get down on only a couple hits of it.
Wow,
really?
Do you microdose? Have you ever?
You should see the dance moves I got.
You ever microdosed? Those all
like microdosed ecstasy?
Yeah,
I don't think ecstasy is the type of drug that you take in small amounts. Like I'll microdose some like acid, a little couple drops in your eyeball just to heighten some senses.
To pass your Monday morning.
I know, because ecstasy is like acid light anyway. When ecstasy was invented, I just looked around and saw who was taking it. It was like yuppies and like teenagers. It's like, get some acid, grow the fuck up.
I'm too straight edge. I'm too straight edge for this show.
All right. Now let's get a little more serious.
We have two really awesome guests in the room with us today. Jack McGarry, cocktail virtuoso, walking drinks encyclopedia, and co-owner of the Dead Rabbit Bar here in New York City. Your word or words in honor of Halloween. We have boo, booze, and boo. Patrick came up with this. Patrick, how do we describe this?
Well, it was booze. These are parts of boo. Derivatives of booze has boo, which is a Halloween. We tried to stick to the Halloween theme. So what do you think of booze? I mean, what's your association? Like a Rorschach drawing? Like, what are the words that come to mind?
Jack, sorry.
Which one? Jack.
That's Jack.
Jack, when you
Patrick's
hear booze.
Being completely confused by all the sound.
What do I think?
All these Irish names. Jack James?
Yeah.
Jack James and Sean James.
Okay. Sounds like rappers. Go. What do you think? When you think booze, your whole career is around booze. So.
I wish I had some right now to join in with you guys.
We offered. You can't say we didn't offer.
All right, Sean Muldoon, I hear you're ice obsessive, detail obsessive, and the creative force behind The Merchant in Belfast, Ireland, and now The Dead Rabbit here in New York City, along with Jack. What's your word? Bar wench.
What is a bar wench?
Yeah, you don't know what a wench
is? I know what a wench is. I don't know what a bar wench is.
Oh, I was thinking of the medieval inn. You know, you would be a person going on a pilgrimage and would see...
A bar wench is pretty much the same as a winch. A winch draws something in, right? It pulls a truck closer, right? A winch just lures men into a bar. A bar winch.
I thought that was the bar keep. She was a barkeeper who was just an old
I don't know.
Hag.
I just made that whole thing up anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
But like the bartender throughout history, who was that person? What's your word association with bartender?
I thought he said bar wrench, and I'm thinking the thing you fix the keg when it's not working.
That's what I thought you were talking about. I was like, what is a bar wrench? A bartender, somebody that entertains, a host, makes you feel welcome.
I see. Interesting. Entertains. Do you guys entertain when you're there? Are you talking to most of your guests who are sitting at the bar?
Listening to their problems.
Each other.
I see.
Are you guys there every night?
Every day.
Every day.
Do you ever work nights?
No, our work is tends to be done during office hours.
I see. And so are you doing a lot of like gin Gibsons for high-powered Wall Street CEOs and stuff?
We don't do gin Gibsons. Somebody else does gin Gibsons.
So I see. What's an Irish cocktail?
Tipperary.
Irish coffee.
We're famous for our Irish coffee.
Your Irish coffee or your iced Irish coffee?
No, Irish coffee.
So
Irish,
why is your Irish coffee... better than my Irish coffee, except for the fact that, like, I'm a Jew from Brooklyn. But what's in your Irish coffee that puts it over?
Okay, so most people, when they make an Irish coffee, it's like not thought out properly. It's got to be thought out like a cocktail. We think of ours like a cocktail, so it's constructed like a cocktail. Mm. It's all about balance and proportion. So we fully believe that our Irish coffee is one of the best that you can possibly get. So we've spent years developing this.
But what is it? Tell us. This show loves to know a little bit the secrets of the finer foods in life. So is it the cream? Is it?
It's like when nothing stands out and it all sort of works together in perfect harmony. You don't walk away tasting whiskey. You don't walk away tasting coffee. You don't walk away tasting cream. It's just everything together.
Very nice.
You know, I'm a big fan of what I call hobo coffee. I go buy some deli coffee, 50 cents, right? And then I go to the liquor store next door, and I buy a little airplane bottle of Bailey's.
Or whatever they have for cheap.
Or whatever's less than $2. And then I will mix it on the street like a hobo. I go, like, spill out some of the black coffee and pour it and put the top back on.
True contrast here. We have the chef's perfectly blended style of forming a cocktail, and then we've got hobo coffee.
We got hobo Mike.
No one's ever, there's a place in the world for everything.
You know, and then yeah, hey, we were walking down Broadway. I think that's what you wanted, a little hobo coffee.
You mean Zabar's neighborhood? You mean Zabar Town?
Zabarville.
Zabar Town?
All right. So
Zabarsburg?
But I've been doing that for years, you know. It's like, because in the winter in New York, you're walking around, I want a hot coffee, and I like to Irish stuff, if you don't mind me saying so, boys. And that's a cheap way to do it, you know?
Is your coffee always spiked in the winter?
No.
No. So speaking of drinks, our favorite royal, Meghan Markle, is obviously celebrating Halloween tonight. And, you know, she's been getting some shit in the tabloids over there in Britain, so she needs to loosen up a bit. What drink would you make her when she says, bartender, make me your house special?
Irish coffee. Right?
Sean, would that be yours?
Yeah, or a pint of Guinness or something like that.
I can't wait to go to this bar. These two are real fucking entertaining, let me tell you.
No, but do you know
full of energy this morning. Do you guys normally not wake up this early? Is that what's happening?
No, the Irish I want to know is you made an outrageous claim on your email to us was that you have the best Guinness in the city. So what is that? Is that how you keep it and it, therefore it tastes better? Like my wife is a cheesemonger, so she ages cheese. So under her watch, the cheese will taste better than under other people's watch. Is that what you do with the Guinness, or do you get access to a
How does your Guinness keg taste better than everyone else's?
Yeah, we were interested in that.
Okay, you want me to be serious?
Yeah, yeah, we want serious.
These are serious questions.
We have two listeners who want to know.
Okay, so
I want to know.
I'm kidding. We have like 1,800 listeners.
So there's a bunch of different reasons why our Guinness is better. One is obviously you've got to use it a lot. It's got to come through the pipes, the lines a lot. But the things that go on behind the scenes would be Guinness is stored at a different temperature than regular beer. It's stored at 42 degrees.
Versus?
37 degrees. So it's warmer, which gives it a creamier sort of texture. But the biggest thing for us is obviously ambience comes into it. You've got to feel like you're in an Irish pub and stuff like that to be transported. But the big thing is the glass cleanliness, which is really, really important when it comes to beer. So we have a dedicated glass washing facility that is the size of a small bar, to be honest.
Wow.
So we wash Guinness glasses twice. We wash them in with detergent, and then we wash them again with non-detergent. So boiling hot water to take the strip the detergent back off, and we have spotless glasses.
Great.
And this is definitely the cleanest pub. I mean,
The, when it comes to, we've done studies in Ireland in all these pubs and throughout Ireland, what makes for the perfect Guinness. And glasses and glass cleanliness is a big, big part of it. Mm-hmm. So it's what we do. It's different than most of the bars.
Once upon a time in another life, you know, I used to work in the beverage business, right? This is for real. I worked for Beverage World Magazine, which is a trade magazine for beer and soft drinks, not spirits. And I went to Guinness. I went to the in Dublin and to their headquarters in London. And they had, at the time, they had effectively had run this marketing campaign to popularize Guinness in America. At the time, Guinness, the impression of it was an old drink. It was a drink for old men. Young people didn't drink it. They wanted to make it like chick friendly and youth friendly. And they did it by creating, by partnering with bars to create friendly Irish environments, by like making sure that there was Irish music that people liked, Van Morrison or U2. They'd always say that Ireland, for a very small country, had a disproportionately large cultural impact on the United States. 100%. People like Irish music, people like Guinness, but people weren't used to drinking Guinness. They had the impression that it was warm and it was for old men. And he said, we effectively lowered the temperature a little bit, and we made the impression that, again, that like if you were in this bar, you needed to be seen with a Guinness in your hand, and they like quadrupled their volume. I mean, there was it's a tiny part of the beer market, like the stout market, but they quadrupled it.
You know,
like
Guinness is its own thing,
by,
huh?
By cooking up bars with musicians, local Irish musicians, and creating this environment that you know, guys could go to meet girls, and not just like, you know, old guys, you know, milk.
It's an experience.
And,
it sounds like,
and teaching guys how to pour the perfect pint. That perfect pint ad campaign was wildly successful. Mm-hmm. You know, because Americans aren't used to that. The two part pull. You know,
I like my Guinness and Old Speckled Hen. Those are my favorite. I thought that might be English, right? Old Speckled Hen. That's alive, like the Guinness. Things move in it. They settle. I like beers like that. Cask beers.
And whiskey. What's the go to whiskey?
For Irish people, Bushmills?
Powers?
I mean, for us, we're hugely supportive of obviously the entire category. We have the biggest Irish whiskey collection in the Americas. We have close to 250 now. So the biggest sellers would be the blends. So that incorporates at least two of the three styles that we make in Ireland. So you have the single grain, which is sweeter and lighter. You have the single malt, which is more floral and citrusy. And you have the single pot still, which is creamier and spicier. We prefer the single pot still. Yeah, because it's got much more backbone to it.
What's it called?
Like a Redbreast or a Parr's John's Lane or a Sick Parr's Signature. They really stand up, like particularly for American consumers that are used to the spiciness of rye and bourbons. The single pot stills really shine.
What's it called? Single pot?
Single pot still.
Single pot
still. So that's the style. That's what the category is called.
Could you give us an example of each of those styles? That Americans would know.
So the blends would be the likes of your powerhouses. So they'd be your Jamesons, your Bushmills, your Tullamore. So that's what you would have as your shot or in a highball and that type of stuff. Your single malts are made with 100% malted barley, and they can be either double or triple distilled the same way in Scotland. And that's examples of those. Bushmills makes fantastic single malts. Kilbeggan and Cooley make great single malts, and there's a whole proliferation of other guys coming along. And the single pot still is a combination of malted and unmalted barley, which then results in a much creamier, robust spirit. And it can be double or triple distilled as well. And the likes of Redbreast, Parr's, Green Spot, Yellow Spot, Red Spot, which is soon to come onto the market, they would be the great examples for those.
Hmm. Obviously, Meghan Markle needs to have a whiskey.
No, she needs to get
Irish
flight.
Whiskey.
I think what you guys would love to know is how pot still whiskey came about. All whiskey in Ireland used to be malted whiskey, and then Britain owned the whole of Ireland, and it imposed these malt taxes, so everybody had to pay for their malted barley. But so Irish people started blending malted and unmalted barley, so they didn't have to pay the tax, and Irish people started developing a taste for it.
I love it.
So that's the part. Yeah. That's the part you guys were like
scheming.
Well, next time someone tries to mix the malt, that's what I'm going to call it. I mean, that's what's it called? Triple. Say again what that one is?
First of all, Patrick didn't pay attention to anything.
No, I didn't.
He's like, can you repeat?
These are words, new words.
They're very new, yeah, for sure.
Single pot still.
Single pot still, yeah.
Is there an Irish-made candy brand that we have here?
Henry?
When we first came over here, American chocolate sucked when we first came over here. It's got better.
Since you got here.
Well, Cadbury's
there's
good.
There's other people here making chocolate.
Well, they got here and Hershey's like heard their calls for change, and they were like, we're going to spice up these Hershey's.
Do you guys have Cadbury there as well, yeah, England?
Yeah. Hershey's is the worst chocolate ever. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Really, really bad.
Well, in New York and in Brooklyn especially, we have a lot of, you know, bean to bar,
but
more small batch.
I like milk chocolate.
I like dark chocolate,
but
I don't like
bitter. I mean, we have
a
neighbor right here.
I know. We have Fine and Raw. We also have Raka in the family, so there's some really cool...
It is true, though. Candy bar chocolate does suck. I mean, you just get to a point where...
Okay, so on that note, what is the best candy... What's the best candy to give on Halloween, and what's the best candy to get?
We're giving out eyeballs.
Eyeballs.
Okay.
So these chocolate eyeballs. And they're nice because I think the blue ones are filled with caramel, and like the red ones are like malted milk balls, and the other ones I think have some crunchy crap.
All right, Jack and Sean, what are yours?
The sort of candy that we would have got growing up, you guys wouldn't be familiar with.
You mean it has whiskey in it
and it pops
in your mouth?
I mean like apple tarts or cider apples or rhubarb and custards.
But you can't give that stuff on Halloween. It's not packaged.
No, basically when you went, people would have just give you that, like a plate of stuff.
Right, but now everybody's so paranoid.
No, we package our candy
in
a Ziploc. Well, we combined, and I touched some candy that's not wrapped with my hands, but I didn't let the kids touch.
Do you know Chewits?
Because they're disgusting.
Do I know what?
Chewits.
Chewits.
Chewies. The Chewits.
They're coming to pack. We would have them as kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, let's just think about this. Is Halloween for you? It's for kids. So what does a kid want?
So I thought
about
that.
A kid wants the biggest freaking candy bar that exists. No. They don't care. I disagree. This one's big.
They want Ring Pops. They last an hour.
No one wants a
Everything's
ring.
Everything's
They last an hour.
I'm going to agree with this one. My kids definitely will search for the Ring Pops out of the candy. I agree.
They don't even finish it.
They're like, it's like a candy they could have for so long they can't even finish it. They like get sick before it's done.
Do you know, I never liked as a kid, but I like now. I appreciate it. I ate a Jolly Rancher yesterday, and a kid cannot bite through it and rush the experience. They have to suck that thing till the friggin' end. And I like that. It shows patience.
This is how you're teaching your kids patience, by giving them Jolly Ranchers.
Yeah, they have
but
no
you
teeth
are
left,
right.
But they there's are only, patient at the dentist.
I found myself in the candy aisle, like, what am I going to buy? It's not
is
for me
Bars?
To eat. No, it was at the terrible Rite Aid on Smith
you
Street.
You shop classy.
That is the worst store of all time.
Worst Rite Aid ever on Smith Street. No customer service. Speaking of...
I mean, it depends on how popular you want to be as a candy giver, right? Because it's like, you could go in there and overthink this, or you could just, like, buy the giant thing of Twix.
No.
And probably, yeah.
Stay unique. Go yeah. eyeball.
Totally.
Do something separate.
Totally. And then the kids walk away and they're like, that fucking asshole. Again, Mike Edison foiled my bag with bullshit.
No, they
but by
ass.
The way, if
kids
a kid takes
eyeballs.
More than one of my bags, I'm literally dragging him across the hallway.
Oh, I know. No. Don't you have a sign threatening all the children?
No, I do. There's a sign on my thing that says, no costume, no candy. That's where it starts. And if you don't say trick or treat, you get nothing. And if some kid is too old, I send them away.
This
is
all written?
And these kids, this is just like, I'm Larry Davidding the shit out of this. I got my own fucking rules. And you follow them or you leave. You know.
He's like the soup Nazi of Halloween candy
giveaway. No candy for you. That's how he doesn't actually end up spending any money on candy.
Like kids that come like with these, like, they're wearing their masks on their head because they get a little warm. I'm like, no fucking way. You put that mask on, and then you say trick or treat, and then we'll see what happens.
Maybe.
And there's a hierarchy about who gets how many eyeballs.
God.
Like scary, like
the masks
I'm really
freak
anti,
me out.
I'm anti princesses and astronauts on Halloween. Like you have 364 days of the year.
So they could
to be
play by the rules.
Or an astronaut. You need to be a dead
See,
astronaut.
Here's
you
the
won't
problem.
Give them candy.
Here's the problem
kids?
Here. This is why people like probably don't come back to Mike's house after because they're like, all this fucking bullshit for a goddamn fucking candy eyeball made out of the worst fucking chocolate in the world.
And then they get it
and they're like, wait, we just got tortured by this guy for a fucking candy eyeball.
All right, guys, next question. Let's keep the Halloween theme. If you had to dress up as your power food, which could be a drink, for Halloween, what is your what would you be wearing right now? Your power food. People have power animals. They have power animals.
Spirit. You're thinking of like
spirit animals.
Okay, your power food or your favorite food. What would you be?
No. Power food. Are you as a food?
I'm gonna be a pint of Guinness, like just like the Kool-Aid man, but like put a pint of Guinness instead with a big smile on it. Oh, like.
My power food would probably be like prosciutto or something.
I would be like a baguette, just a giant fucking loaf of bread.
Power food? Favorite food? Power food to dress as? Well, you'd be a whiskey.
I'd be a bottle of Lucas Ale, probably.
A bottle of what?
Lucas Ale.
I don't know what that
Lucas
is.
I don't know.
What is that?
It's a glucose energy drink.
It's
pretty much a can of Monster.
Got it.
Yeah.
But better.
We need to. Where was that? Didn't we weren't going to pay for someone to translate some of these Irish terms?
Lucas Ale.
Of course, your PR person is like, totally. 100%.
Aren't you Irish also? Yeah, she's Irish.
I love it.
Jack, what would yours be?
A sausage roll.
A sausage roll?
Sausage roll. Uh-oh.
There we go. Something we all know. A sausage roll. Patrick.
Patrick
would
be a pig in a blanket.
Is a sausage roll.
Yeah. I'm looking at Patrick now and I see it. I see it. You are the sausage roll, the one that's like left at the end of the night that's been sitting under the heat lamp. You know, and you come into the pizzeria and you're so fucked up and anything will do and it's like a sad sausage roll.
And you'll pay $5
for it. It's like outside is soggy, but the skin of the sausage is sweaty.
Yeah, yeah. And the green pepper is like wilting. It's like a tragedy of American agriculture. But it's like no problem. This is what you want.
This is what I need right now.
Speaking of disguising, what is your go-to sauce or spice for disguising food?
Whiskey.
My it could be something bad.
My favorite sauce actually is Peter Luger sauce. It's the one I'll most eat over time, or very, very, very hot sauce. But Peter Luger, they just got panned in the press. They got satisfactory.
They didn't get a no stars. No star review from the New York Times.
And they did another article in the same issue, 10 steakhouses can we that talk are about not this? Peter Luger. Yeah.
Can we talk about this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Like, the rise of the steakhouse and the rebirth of the traditional steakhouse as it is has become so popular that people just got, like, it evolved. They stayed the same. And it evolved. And that's what happened. And they got passed by.
You mean the service was shitty, the meat wasn't cooked as perfectly.
Hey, I love Peter Luger's for what it is, but they just they keep doing it how they do it. And like that's cool.
But
it's
they're
great.
Still full
it's a great,
all the time.
It's a great place. But people are going to be better than you eventually, right? They're still full. Also, I don't think they give a fuck what people say about them. Well, and if I was them, I wouldn't either, because you know what? They're full every night, and it's a great experience. Yeah. It's a fun experience.
They wrote a response. The GM, who's the grandson of the founders, said, you know, the reviewers come and go, the opinions and the whims and everything.
And Peter Luger's is still there.
Exactly.
And I actually agree with this. Like, they're standing tall, and they're true to their what they do. And hey, man, like there is now better steakhouses than them. But it's still an experience that you can only get at Peter Luger's. People, they just have better service.
Yeah.
They're like, everyone knows how to age a steak now. Like, they're not like in front of anything.
But
like, everyone knows how to do what they do.
To me, about this whole steak thing, the underpinning all the articles, they all buy meat from the same three companies. How different can they really be?
What was interesting in his response, the GM, he said that someone in their family is their is like their USDA like prime purchaser for all their meat, which I didn't think was true.
Used to do that.
He said that someone
sure
still does.
It's his sister, I believe, or maybe his aunt.
But what
it's
does that mean?
Them.
That's the person that calls Pat LaFrieda and says, hey,
goes to the lot and she chooses the sides of beef. She goes and she walks through and they start and they chew. And
you know
like,
who else
that,
did
that's
that?
A lot
Adam
of,
Perry Lang for yeah. Joe and Mario but, at in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. That Carnivino. That steak was outrageous, though. That was a whole different level.
But they were
of
going in
of steak. I mean, having
because I think they really had someone. I think the Peter Luger person has not been there.
No, they were aged
years,
in like a cave under a mountain in Vegas. You know, I was at Peter Luger recently, and I concur with the Pete Wells review. It sucked. I was very
service or food.
You know, the service was fine. It was just steak. It wasn't enlightened, but it never was. You know, whatever the fuck that.
So
means.
Can I ask?
But the steak, frankly, was not good. It was very, very expensive for what it was. And I've also been eaten recently at Sparks and
Keen's.
And I've been to Keen's within the last year.
Smith and Walensky.
Smith and Walensky.
You go there every year with your old uncle,
right? I go there every few months with a standing date with a 80-year-old man. It's the only restaurant he knows in New York. And that's not a great restaurant either, but it is very, very consistent. That's why he likes it.
It's in a nice neighborhood.
And he likes it, and it's consistent. The service there is pretty good. It's perfectly, you know, a steakhouse, there's the professional waiter.
But what was the problem at Peter Luger's exactly?
I don't think the steak was great. I thought that the service was horrid. You know what I like about Peter Luger's? I like the menu. It's a steak. That's it. That's pretty much it. You know, you got to be crazy. I mean, he talked about ordering the Dover sole. I mean, that was one of the flaws.
Also, like they got to make a fucking killing off all of the sides. Like, they give you like raw tomatoes and onions, and it costs like $17, and like two slabs of bacon for $22.
Are they still cash only?
Yes. And that's got to be the largest margin in like the history of like restaurants is the wedge of like iceberg lettuce for like $15, the classic iceberg lettuce wedge.
Yeah, classic.
You know, it's someone farted a little bit of blue cheese on and that's the salad.
So guys, can I ask you, when you go to great restaurants or steakhouses, do most bars have a decent selection of Irish patrimony, history, representation on the shelves? Or do most people buy shitty Irish things? Or, you know,
I think
what's the quality of the liquor?
Definitely when we first came here, it was very, very poor. But since the Dead Rabbit has opened and since Irish whiskey, the category has expanded. We're seeing a lot more Irish whiskey consumption in different styles, we went in the bar before Dead Rabbit opened and asked for their what whiskey they had, Irish whiskey, and they said they had none. We then asked what whiskey do you use for your Irish coffee, and they said bourbon. And that's when we realized we had to do something.
But that place was in Brooklyn we're talking about, and the thing is it was a cocktail bar. And if you're a cocktail bar, if you promote yourself as being a cocktail bar, then you've got to be able to make classic cocktails. You've got to be able to make a margarita. You've got to be able to make an old fashioned, and an Irish coffee is a classic cocktail. Make it with bourbon is like making a margarita with vodka. It's the same thing.
I will say there are remarkably few coffee drinks with alcohol in them. I'm always looking for one because I want coffee sometimes in my drink. Like if we've been working, then we have a work dinner or something like that, and we're exhausted from Cup Pack, then yeah.
I remember we talked about this last year on the show. I think we were talking about there's the Shakerado, which is often, what is it, vodka?
Yeah, the espresso martini.
Yeah, the espresso martini. You can call it a Shakerado. Mm-hmm.
It a Shakerado?
Why, a Shakerado?
That sounds like very 21st century hipster.
A Shakerado is an Italian iced coffee in Italy, but I'm thinking it's on a dessert menu, it's going to have alcohol.
Listen, when I'm in Italy, I offer my cafe corretto. You know, I get, right? You hit me a little grappa in there. Yeah. It's not enough to get a real buzz, but it's enough to get that sugar and the caffeine cooking in my bloodstream. And there's just the right amount. You know, we're not talking about a full measure of liquor. And in Spain, I order a Carajillo, which is, you know, brandy or it could be rum, you know, after dinner. It's, you know, kind of trendy to order better liquor or good cognac, you know, if you want to. Correctly, it's done where you set the liquor on fire. You heat it up with the espresso machine so you can ignite the, you put the sugar in. You put the liquor on top of it, ignite the liquor so it starts to...
Brulee.
Right, and then you drip the coffee on top of it, and as you were saying, it becomes one seamless thing. You're not tasting sugar, alcohol, and coffee. Yeah. You're tasting this miracle of a thing called a carajillo, which is basically the solution to all of life's small
problems.
Is
the coffee brand important?
Not necessarily the coffee brand, more the style of coffee. So for a good Irish coffee, you would have to use a good quality French press. And a big mistake a lot of bars make, they use filter that's sitting on the hot plate for too long and it takes on a really bitter note.
I like that they talk about that kind of stuff.
And then also espresso would just dominate. So you tend to stick with a good quality French press and it blends really well with.
So how long does it take to make an Irish coffee?
I mean, for us, we've got it down to, I think we've done a video recently where we were able to, because the whole thing with the pint of Guinness is it's 119 and a half seconds for the correct pour. That's what they say.
Wow.
And in that period, we did a video recently that we made 20 Irish coffees in that period of time. Because when we first opened, we were asked for Irish coffees because we were trying to be this ultimate Irish bar and we weren't ready for it. So the whole thing for us was to be able to execute a world-class Irish coffee in 10 seconds. So we have the coffee and the sugar sitting in a sous vide, which we have at about 73 degrees. And then we just pour an ounce of whiskey. We top it up with this coffee and sugar mix. And then we finish it off with cream that sits in the fridge. So it's cold and you have the perfect liquid underneath in terms of the heat. And the cream has to be over 36% fat content. So you've got the contrast of the cold cream, the right heat underneath. So you're able to drink it, because another mistake of hot drinks is that they're extremely hot and it takes forever to drink them. So we want the Irish coffees to be drank in quick succession.
Wow.
Wow.
So you open at 11 a.m. I think we need an Irish coffee.
Yeah, I was like, this sounds so delicious. I'm like, I wonder if I have time to sneak this in before Halloween starts.
Do you guys make a Patrick Martin's? That's 1 ounce of Irish whiskey, 1 ounce of Cynar, a shot of espresso, squirt of simple syrup, and orange zest.
Who named it after you?
I named it after myself.
Just now?
Yes, I took it, but I like that. 1 ounce of great Irish whiskey, the triple kind. 1 ounce of Cynar. Shot of espresso, can be any. I like, he's like, all this about the thing. And you're like, does the coffee matter? He's like, nah.
No, just but the way, I mean, no, the way matter. You brew the
it
does no,
matter. It sounds like everything's matter. I think he's saying is like it doesn't matter
as
like
long as it's
what
the
brand of coffee
yeah,
is.
Yeah, as long as it's drip.
Well, we use an Indonesian coffee because it has the right earthiness and chocolatiness. But again, if it's a good quality bean and you're putting it through the French press, it's gonna.
You're not gonna use like a single origin Ethiopian coffee that tastes like grapefruit and flowers.
Yeah. So what is an Irish coffee?
You're looking for a rich,
it
like,
has to have rich
like
earthiness,
like
yeah.
earthy, yeah. like chocolatey yeah. caramel notes yeah, type of coffee.
What does an Irish coffee cost?
Let me guess. $14?
I was going to say 12.
Yeah, okay, the hobo coffee. Yeah. The hobo coffee, the deli coffee is 50 cents.
I was going to say 12, but I was like, yours is the best. So yeah. Yeah. 14.
Yeah. I was between 12 and 14.
See, well, we make our own glasses as well. We have our own glass that we created.
You also have to account for the cost of dishwashing your glassware twice.
Oh, yeah, by the way, the Patrick Martins needs to be in a very clean glass.
Yeah. Only a few smudges on the rim.
The funny thing is that doesn't really sound like a Patrick Martin to me. If it was a true Patrick Martin, it would be a really dirty glass.
Cup, yeah. Yeah,
it'd be
all my kind of nasty. These are dirty martinis, kind of
nasty, like smudged cup.
By the way, I don't like dirty martinis. I like martinis. Whatever.
The dirty martini. I came around. I like it slightly dirty.
Is why?
Because I do like, I like the brine. I don't want it to be overwhelming.
I like Gibson's because they have the onion in there, and that gives me the brine I want. But I don't want it dirty.
You taste for gin, though. But I do. I thought that was like, you know, at first it was like this was some sort of abomination, like changing the recipe of a classic martini. But I do like a little bit of the brine. I like it with olives.
So can we get some?
I like just gin. Like in a big, huge cup.
Oh,
like, or in like a thermos. Like, you gotta sneak it around. It's like vodka. You just put it in a water bottle. Nobody even knows.
So we saved our scariest question for the last one before we do a quick rapid fire interview with these guys. Can we get some music for the scary question?
We need to channel the dead. We're bringing back the dead a little bit.
We've heard that for every living person on the planet today, there are 10 people who have died. Once again, that means that everyone, for all the people who've ever lived in history, there's 10 of them dead for every one of us living on the planet today. If you could bring back just one person, famous or not, to have a drink with, who would it be? And why? Emily. Grandma Pearson?
Nana Marge? No.
Esther the Molester? Your weird aunt on your father's side?
Was Nana Marge a big drinker, was she?
Nana Marge, yeah, actually, yeah. Nana Marge really liked her vodka.
Yeah.
And her pickled herring, and she made great cookies. Was the extent of her.
Jews love pickled.
This question can also be, who were you reincarnated? Who was your previous person? That's also an acceptable answer, as long as they're dead.
What's your answer for that?
Hey, listen, I'm asking the questions.
Ooh. No, I'd bring back my other grandmother who only passed away 3 years ago. Siddell Sloan. Great lady.
Wait, you talk to her. She knows you. But she's like, what's happened with you? You'd be like, what happened to you? She's like, nothing. I've been dead. Be boring.
It's a good thing Nana's not here to hear this.
We said famous or not.
Okay. Mike?
Who would I bring back?
Anybody. Julius Caesar, Brutus.
Anybody. Jimi Hendrix, Jesus Christ. Hank Williams.
Christ.
You know, no one ever says that. There are always these silences, and people always want to bring back, oh man, I really want to, you know, to talk to like Janis Joplin or something. Really? You'd rather talk to Janis Joplin than Marcus Aurelius? Yeah, I never understood these. Like, you know, this, like,
what about somebody related to you, but generations and generations and generations ago?
Nah.
No? All right, forget it.
He's trying to do away with the Edison name. Brandon, anybody.
I mean, I would just probably do a random poll of the graveyard. I'd just be like, this guy looks good. Bob Evans? Yeah. Hey, he sounds like a cool fucking dude.
1840 to 1890?
He died with a 12-pack in the back of his truck. Let's see what happened. Oh, sounds like God. A cool dude.
Was that written on his tombstone? He died with a 12-pack? All right, good answer. I'm happy you read the outline question.
And who were you reincarnated as, Patrick? Bob Marley? What?
Who would I have been reincarnated? I might have died in the Holocaust and that I had all this potential. So that's why in this life I'm so successful.
Mm. Oh, wow. That's
all right,
real self-aware.
Who would you guys bring back for a drink? Someone you've always wanted to meet?
I'll be boring. That's fine. Because I'm going to be honest.
Sure.
Hemingway.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm just a big fan of Hemingway. I'm a fan of his writing, fan of his... He was a product of his time. I understand that people like Hemingway wouldn't be around today and... do what they did then today.
Well, he would have done it, but he would have gotten in trouble.
Yeah, he would have gotten in trouble. But the time, the place, I just think he was a very interesting guy.
Have you ever been to his house in the Florida Keys?
I've been everywhere.
Okay. I love that whole little part of the world. I mean, getting down there is a pain in the ass, but man, he lived in a nice house. And actually, he bred a four-toed cat or a six-toed cat.
Most cats are probably dying.
And there's thousands of them around the museum.
You got to take a trip to Robbie's on your way out there, and definitely don't miss Woody's either, if you guys know about Woody's.
Are you
going to
bring back Woody and Robbie? on the way?
I would totally bring back Woody and Robbie. I don't know if Woody or Robbie are dead.
Oh, I just made them dead. I'm sorry.
No,
I don't know why.
They're alive.
Jack, you got anybody for us?
I'm going to be very boring too. There's a very famous soccer player from Ireland where we're from called George Best. He played for Man United, so I think we could be doing with him right now because Man United absolutely suck right now.
Oh.
So, but he turns out.
So you would take a shot on a ghost?
Yes.
Wow, you guys must be really bad.
Yeah, really, really.
I'm going to pull this old dead guy out of the ground and see what he can do.
Mike would have taken Jesus, and Jesus is like, I'll do any magic for you. What do you want? Mike would be like, come down to the dead rabbit. He's like, can you change that Irish coffee from $14 to $10? Thanks, Jesus.
All right, we're going to take a quick break.
He turned water to wine, my kind of Jew.
All right, stick around. We'll be back shortly with Jack and Sean from the Dead Rabbit.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin has storied cheese history that begins with Swiss, German, and Italian settlers in the 1800s and continues today with nonstop innovation and award-winning artisanship. Wisconsin was the first state to establish cheese grade standards and the first to require that every cheese plant be overseen by a licensed cheesemaker. It is the only place outside of Europe where one can pursue an elite master cheesemaker certification. All of this helps Wisconsin cheese win more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country. Take, for example, Decatur Swiss Cheese Co-op, who have made cheese since the 1940s. Steve Stettler is a Wisconsin master cheesemaker who developed several new cheeses for the co-op, including a European-style Havarti, a Swiss lace cheese called Stettler Swiss, and a Colby Swiss marbled cheese. His cheeses have won awards at the Wisconsin State Fair and the World Championship Cheese Contest. To learn more about Wisconsin's award-winning cheesemakers, visit wisconsincheese.com.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th, for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Join us to explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, where you'll taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Join the party. Tickets are available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
All right, and we're back with our extra special Halloween episode of the Main Course OG, broadcasting live from the back of Roberta's here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We've got Mr. Mike Edison and Brandon Hoy on the theremin.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Awesome. We are here in studio with Jack McGarry and Sean Muldoon of the Dead Rabbit here in New York City on Water Street. Tell us about the bar. What is it like being in the financial district? And we were talking earlier about the origin of the name.
Well, financial district, I've been here in the city 9 years, and I've always sort of worked in and around the financial district, so I'm very familiar with the area. When we first took on the building, it was a bit of a ghost town down there. There was nothing happening after like 8 o'clock at night. So, but we thought we were offering something different. I knew the area, I was familiar with the area, and I could sort of see why some bars weren't doing well and what I thought would make a good bar. So all we did was create an Irish pub that was true to Ireland, you know, because a lot of the Irish pubs in New York are not anything like the pubs in Ireland. So we wanted to do something that people in Ireland would be very familiar with. Mm-hmm. And it's worked for us because it's our biggest fans, obviously the local community, but the biggest fans we have are the Irish people that come to visit for a weekend or 4 or 5 days, whatever. They're just in the bar every day. It has become a big tourist bar.
Because they've come from Ireland, and they've come to New York, and they still can't get enough of the local pub.
Yep. 100% right.
It's like a home from home. So they'll come with their suitcases and everything. It's mad. Like, as soon as they get off a plane, straight to the bar.
Wow. Are you highly promoted in Ireland, or it's that people are looking for something?
You can see it from Ellis Island.
See it as you land at JFK? Do you have a little antenna?
We had this bar in Belfast. It was the Merchant Hotel. It's in the middle of Belfast, and it was very famous. It won Tales of the Cocktail Best Bar and all that sort of stuff. And nobody in Belfast really accepted it or understood it. They were like, wise yourself up. You're not the best bar. That's the way they thought. But when you come and do it in New York, it's a completely different ballgame. It's like, we talk like this all the time. It's like having a degree from one university and having a degree from Yale University. It's a difference in degrees.
Sure.
When you are the best in New York or whatever, you're the best. That's it. They accept that. So it's like, when you were in Belfast, nobody really came and appreciated it. But when you're over here, everybody loves it. So it's New York means everything to people back in Ireland. So
that's why I was in Arizona once. I was amazed. There was a place called New York Carpets. And I was like, I guess if you put New York in front of it.
Yeah, well, a lot of cities have New York bagels.
Well, two things. First of all, have you ever actually met anybody from Yale University? No, well, you would know, because it only takes them about 5 minutes before they work into the conversation. And that's where they went. But the other thing is, like, I guarantee you, if something says it claims to be New York style, the more it says New York, the less likely it is to actually be that thing. If you're in Key West and it says New York style hot dogs, count on it. It won't be. I remember I was in Florida visiting one of my aging Jewish relatives, and the restaurant that we got sent to was called New York Style Italian Restaurant. And I thought that just was the description, the tagline, it was going to be called...
That was the name?
It was called, like, Tony's, Italian, New York Style Italian Restaurant. No, it was actually just called Italian Style New York Style Italian Restaurant, and they sold, like, buckets of veal parmesan.
They should just call it Tony Pepperoni's. You would have believed it. So
you just told us you're opening in New Orleans.
Oh, shit.
What's it going to be like going into a new market?
Yeah, they don't accept outsiders so much, New Orleans. Like, many, many chefs don't. They open everywhere, but not in New Orleans.
I think it's like the Southern hospitality, Irish hospitality, is very similar. We're very welcoming tribes and make people feel welcome. So I do think that because we're Irish, we will have a lot in common with people in New Orleans. We've been to New Orleans countless times. And so we're very familiar with the French Quarter and very familiar with the area. But obviously, we're not from that area, but I think we'll settle in well.
Now, when you try to make a bar Irish comfortable, you're probably spending a lot more money on things, woods and sheens and height of the bar stools. Yep. I mean, you're probably having to craft a lot of the stuff yourselves. You can't just go to IKEA and buy 80 chairs, right?
Yep. Just to give you that, like, I'm not bumming and blowing, obviously, but you've asked a question, I'm going to answer it. But, like, the photographs on our walls, I'm talking about in the extension. We opened an extension at Christmas, in the new year there. And because the demand, we needed to have an extension. The bar was too busy, and it was becoming too cramped and uncomfortable, so we had to build an extension. But the photos in that walls were like $80,000. That's how much it would cost to open a bar somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But it was $80,000 just on photographs. We had a guy travel around Ireland for a month to get unique shots. We told him what we wanted. He went away with the driver. We had to pay for the driver's accommodation, his accommodation, traveling expenses, all that type of stuff. And they went to get them framed, printed, hung, installed. And it's an $80,000. But people come into the bar, they're not expected to know that. We don't want them to. This is how much that costs. But what they know is this is different.
That makes your little lion holding the lion cub in the Roberta's thing look real shitty now. That Billy Joel one. You didn't spend $50,000 or anything like that.
What are you talking about? Those are real pictures of Billy Joel and Christy Brinkley. And they're signed on the back.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, by Bob Evans. And
Woody.
And Woody from Woody. Hey, so are you guys anti-Bill the Butcher? Is that a thing?
Yeah, so we're the film Gangs of New York that we're talking about, right? There was a character. The thing about that film that the thing about that film that really annoys both of us is the central figure in all of it, in the real Gangs of New York, wasn't even mentioned. And it pisses us off because he was Irish. John Morrissey was responsible for killing Bill the Butcher in real life, and he's not even mentioned in that film. And he was a badass in Bill the Butcher. He was a heavyweight boxing champion in America. He founded Saratoga Racecourses. He was a congressman. He was a member of the Senate. And he was a leader of the Dead Rabbits. And he's not even mentioned in that film, and that pisses us off. So our bar is a homage to John Morrissey.
Oh, good for you.
Is there a picture of him?
He's born in upstate New York. Sorry, he's buried in upstate New York. He was born in Ireland, but we have pictures. Yeah, our whole menus are based on him.
Do you have a picture of his grave?
Before we opened the bar, we went to his grave.
Oh, nice.
I'm surprised you didn't want to bring him back from the dead.
Wait, Patrick, take a letter.
He's too tough.
You're Mr. Scorsese.
Is The Quiet Man a true story? Is that a great Irish movie?
It's not a true story, but it's a nice story.
John Wayne, longest fight scene in movie history. In The Quiet Man.
They should have a. They could have a maybe movie
Patrick,
poster.
Maybe Patrick hanging. Could take an homage to The Quiet Man.
Yeah, yeah. So
shortest fight
for just a little bit.
This weekend you have an Irish whiskey festival. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so with the Irish Whiskey Festival, as we've came and spoke to you guys today, we're really excited for people to walk away knowing a bit more about Irish whiskey, because for a lot of people, they know Jameson, Bushmills, and Tullamore and shots and stuff like that. We want to educate people, and we feel now is the right time, because there's close to 25 distilleries now operating in Ireland. If we had had this festival a couple of years ago, it would have been shit, because there was only 3 distilleries operating. But there is an explosion right now, and we really want the champion in the category. So there's going to be over 25 brands that have.
Where is it?
It's going to be a puree.
Okay.
And we have 2 sessions. There's one that runs from 1 to 4, and then the other session starts at 5:30. So we think it's a great way to spend your Saturday. And it's going to be really cool. We're going to have all the brands there. We're going to have a Dead Rabbit pop-up. So we'll be doing cocktails with Irish whiskey. Obviously, our Irish coffee will be heavily featured, and we'll also have bands and Irish food. So as much as this is about Irish whiskey, we're also trying to promote Ireland in general. So we're really excited to showcase it. And
can we broadcast a show, the 5 of us, at your place one day at 11 o'clock and be drinking as we're talking and all that? Yeah, have you ever done that?
Yeah.
All right. But if you'd be willing to have us.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, this way we can taste the Irish coffee.
Mike's on his 5th Irish coffee.
And Guinness as
Mike's
we talk about it.
Mike's already passed out.
That was not a theremin. That was Mike losing control of his bodily processes.
So how do people find out about the Irish Whiskey Festival? Is there a website?
You can go on to the New York Irish Whiskey Festival, and then there's a direct link to Eventbrite to purchase tickets. So there's an entry-level ticket, and there's also a VIP ticket, which encompasses some cocktails from the Dead Rabbit team. That will be working a puree.
Cool.
So you can get everything from the website.
I'd just like to add that, since we've come here, one thing that we've realized is that Americans, our customers and stuff, they know a lot about whiskey, and they drink a lot of whiskey, especially our bar. That's what we sell most of. They don't really know a lot about Irish whiskey because nobody ever took it seriously. It was always Jameson. It was always a light type of thing you shot. That wasn't something that you sipped on and spent time over. But I think Americans are not people, for example, that whiskey drinkers are starting to realize that there's much more to Irish whiskey than they previously thought. So this is the first. It's never happened before, and we're excited. And it's like you talking earlier, it's going to take a while to get it where we want to get it, but it has to be done. And we're probably a wee bit ahead of the game here by doing this so soon, but it needs to be. We need to start it now. We need to kickstart it now.
And Ireland invented whiskey. Is that safe to say? Or it's more part of its culture than any other nationality?
Is it what, sorry?
I mean, does any other country embrace whiskey more than Ireland?
I would actually say America.
Yeah. But America and Ireland, right? And was it invented by an Irishman? Or did you mention this earlier in the show? I mean, English. I mean, do you consider it an Irish thing?
I mean, we created whiskey.
Okay.
The Scotch, or the first in terms of definition and in literature, it was first defined in Ireland.
When? Like Scots. 1300s?
It was very early on. And
when
then,
archives were started, yeah.
And Scotland got in the game, and obviously Scotland really pushed on just before Prohibition and after, because they adopted grain whiskey, which made things more palatable. Mm-hmm. And then they were also very clever in terms of branding and also working with Americans during Prohibition, where Irish distillers were they didn't want to do anything illegal, which is quite surprising in hindsight. But Irish whiskey is definitely coming back, and I think there was a recent study said by 2032 we should be overtaking Scotch whiskey, which would be awesome. But there's a big tradition obviously in Scotland, and there's a huge tradition
Fuck
in America.
Scotland.
Japan is coming in on the game.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a movement in Australia now as well. They're getting in the game.
Japan,
so.
With every trend, Japan's like, we're going to do it, and we're going to come in third, or possibly fourth.
But Japanese whiskey is really good, I have to say.
It is really good.
Because they have so little space, everything they make is exquisite.
They're also very patient culture, so they have no problem not speeding up the process and just making something that's very good. Yeah. They never drink because they die before it's ready. Probably the most sophisticated, I would say, because it's just very, very... It's probably overly thought out.
Yeah.
Like, they thought about it too much.
Yeah, it's like when we have Japanese whiskey in the bar, it sells out very, very quickly.
Yeah,
because everyone Everyone wants the Kobe of everything. Well, you're a sophisticate in some ways, Brandon.
How do you figure?
How is the dead rabbit celebrating Halloween tonight?
I mean, we don't.
Is there a sign outside? No costumes allowed.
I mean, we're all embracing. Like, we're not going to turn people away, but we do not encourage it. We certainly don't promote come dressed up or anything.
What about SantaCon? Those are mostly Irish people.
SantaCon is forbidden. Nobody on that day. Nobody is allowed into the bar with a Santa uniform.
Brandon was part of a writing campaign to kick SantaCon out of this neighborhood, or someone from your restaurant was.
Oh, you said a writing campaign? Yeah, Do you think I've ever been involved in a writing campaign? I could barely spell my name.
Wasn't it a petition?
Yeah, there was a petition. I definitely signed that petition as well. Yeah, nobody Santa really Con's wants that worst. Happening to their business.
No,
it's annoying, and it just pisses off your real customers.
Yeah. Can you guys take a picture of us for our Instagram in front of the bar today?
The weird thing about the new bar, if you recall, which is crazy, is it started as some like sort of avant performance art thing with a couple of knuckleheads saying, hey, let's dress up like Santa Claus and go around. It was just a handful of people. It wasn't like, you know, frat boy, you know, jock drinkathon with people.
Mike, we know you still do it because of that noble history.
Oddball outlier performance art thing, and it just caught on in all the wrong possible ways.
All right, Mike.
All right, well, see you luckily, on Santa Con. Yeah. Tonight is not Santa Con.
Patrick Martin's-a-thon.
Happy Halloween, like everybody. Jack and Sean, thanks for joining us. Have fun at the Irish Whiskey Festival.
Thank you. All right, what do you think?
This program is powered by Simplecast.
The Main Course OG is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.